Well, thank you and welcome everybody for the conference today. For those that would have more questions for Dr. Douglas, he'll be around the Cattlefax booth some today and as well tomorrow. So please stop by and quiz him on what maybe the situation is in your local area. My name is Mike Murphy, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the African swine fever, China, and a little bit on the corn situation, and then we'll finish up a little bit of a discussion on the energy markets here in the U.S. As we think about African swine fever, obviously that was a dominating storyline in 2019. And as we look at this map here, we can see that there's been cases of African swine fever that actually dates back several decades. Specifically in China, where it's had the biggest influence, the first reported case was in August of 2018. And as we all know, since that time frame, it's really had a rapid growth and a huge impact on their industry. African swine fever has moved into other parts of Southeast Asia, like the Philippines, South Korea, and Vietnam. So that entire part of the country has really had a huge, or the entire part of the world has had a huge impact. The thing about African swine fever is it's a very hard virus to kill. It's been known to actually stay in frozen meat for upwards to 3 years. It's not highly contagious, but it is have a very high mortality rate, 95% mortality rate. And clearly that's been the impact that's had on China here over the course of the last year. And what we have to remember about the China supply is we think about global protein, about half of the herd for the hog industry was in the country of China pre-ASF. Now, obviously, they've had a huge decline here as we look at this supply and production for China. They've seen their herd decimated by about half. So that impact across the globe has been rippling. Now, the key thing as we start to look at the situation with China is that we only trade globally about 18 billion pounds of pork globally. So even if China wanted to fulfill their whole, there's no way that the globe could really do that. That's where the real influence has been as we start to think about protein prices for all three of the key proteins, beef, pork, and poultry, is that the markets tried to position itself to create a signal across the marketplace that we need to produce more protein. Randy mentioned that earlier when we think about the rally that we had in the lean hog futures market last spring, in the spring of 2019. That sent a very clear signal, not only domestically in the United States of America, but really globally to expand pork production. And in fact, we were going to go ahead and do that. We're going to see from 2018 into our forecast of 2020, we'll see over a 7% increase in pork production alone here in the United States of America. So the signal is very clear to go see that expansion. The challenge that we've run into is that with the trade war, we haven't been able to offset maybe as much of that pork supply from the United States going into China. That obviously has changed in here with the trade agreement that we've had in the course of the last 45 days, and that's a very big positive for the United States of America. Other parts of the world have seen prices improve. We start to look at this chart and you think about what's going on in Brazil and Germany as a couple of the countries on that chart. And you can see from that kind of July to October of 2018 period to where we are today, we've seen a steady increase in those prices. And that's because they have had that access into that Chinese market. They have been shipping major amounts of product into China because of their shortage. Clearly, as we look at what the China market's done, and it's sitting here at $350 a hundredweight on a lean hog equivalent, that's nearly six times the value of what we're trading lean hogs are here in the United States. That's a huge difference. And there is an opportunity as we look forward until ASF is rectified, until they can find a vaccine, which it's important to note that there's a lot of conversations surrounding vaccinations for African swine fever. There's been nothing that's been approved and commercialized at this point in time. And even when we do get that approval, it'll likely take between 24 and 36 months before it can really carry through to be able to see where China has an opportunity to kind of restock and rebuild their industry back to the levels it was prior to African swine fever. So we're in a window here over the next few years that there's definitely going to be a shortage of pork in the country of China, and that does create opportunities for countries like the United States, as well as some of these other countries in the EU and South America. One of the things that's really showcased itself because of that shortage of protein supply is that demand for beef in China has grown significantly. If we start to think about what the United States exported in terms of beef tonnage to China in 2019, it was about 30 million pounds, a very, very small amount. But when we look at countries like Australia, Uruguay, Brazil, Argentina, each of those countries exported over 650 million pounds of beef into China, respectively. There's clearly a demand out there for beef, and the market's trying to respond to that. You can see as we look at the global beef prices, they are trying to go back and test those old highs that were in that tightest supply of the century back in that 2014 timeframe. The demand at this point is actually stronger globally than what the supply has for beef. Now, some of that may change in here over the course of the next few years, because that is also sending a signal to say, hey, we need to be able to produce more beef as we look at things. You look at the pork and poultry side, they've been more of a trading range here in the last 5 years, but certainly they're testing the high end of that range. And we believe that from a global perspective, that'll continue to be the case as we look at things. Now let's shift gears a little bit and we think about the trade war that we've come through here over the course of the last couple of years. We get the announcement there in December that we had phase one agreed upon. We had a ceremonial signing of that here just a few weeks ago, and we got some details about that agreement. As you look at this chart here, you can see we're talking about agriculture exports to China and Hong Kong, and we're talking about in billions of dollars. The first thing that really stands out is that they used 2017 as that baseline. And what we're expected to see is a $12.5 billion increase in 2020 from the 2017 baseline, and then a $19.5 billion increase in 2021. Those are significant increases, and that's going to have a huge impact on agriculture products. That's going to range from corn, soybeans, pork, beef. This also incorporates ethanol. And that's something that I think that's really important, because that'll have a potential influence, obviously longer term, on the corn industry. Now, specifically to the beef sector, right, the agreement that came out, and there was really three take-home points relative to that agreement. Number one, China is going to accept hormone products from the United States. And that's a huge change from where they'd been on the policy standpoint. Number two, they're going to accept the United States traceability, which is essentially just utilizing the food safety inspection services, just what our packing operations would have for that traceability. And then the third thing, which is not necessarily a huge impact today, but maybe longer term, is that they're actually going to do a risk assessment on ractopamine for both cattle and swine, and assess whether or not that's something that they will go ahead and be willing to accept ractopamine-fed animals in the future. Now, that's not something, as we look at it here, maybe in 2020 or even 2021, that would have much of an impact, but it is something that is very positive, that they're willing to sit down and really understand the science of that product and really what it means to all of us in terms of its impact of creating more production to be able to feed the world. So we feel that as a positive. But the China thing overall, when we look at that trade agreement and we look at long term, we feel like it's a very optimistic situation, and we'll talk more about that with Kevin and Randy's talks here in a few minutes. I think the bottom line is we start to look at the amount of product of beef, pork, and broiler that's going into China over the course of the last decade. The most important take-home message that we have is that we will be in a position to be able to provide and supply that grain-fed beef. And that's something that our competition, especially out of South America, just hasn't been able to do. And that's really the real opportunity. And so with this, not only is this going to influence beef, but even though on the pork and the broiler side, we feel like that our share of those imports to the United States will grow as we look at 2020, 2021, and beyond. And that's obviously not been the case because of the trade war here over the course of the last couple of years. No doubt the increase of imports of protein has been going on. That was even going on pre-BSE. I think the big jump, as you can see at the chart in 2019, was relative to ASF. But the bottom line as we look at things here is that we feel like there's a real opportunity to be able to grow this this export business for all three proteins into the U.S., and certainly beef will be the dominating factor of that. So as we shift gears, we think about what's going on from a grain situation, and will China have a positive influence relative to corn and soybeans? The challenges that we run into as we start to think about both corn and soybeans is really the underlying supply, both domestically here in the U.S. and globally. As we look at the corn situation, we go back to last spring, and Randy mentioned it, just the really challenging times that we had to even get the crop in the ground. Then we had a real late crop, and we had a lot of challenges just to get the crop harvested this fall. Some of you still may be in the modes of still harvesting that corn today. But as you look at the USDA data that came out with the annual WASDE report there in January, and we start to go through that harvested acre number, clearly it was a number that ended up being not quite as concerning as we originally thought. You sit there and you look at the yield. Obviously, that late crop had an influence on yield. And then we look at that total supply. The real key, though, is that they made revisions to the supply from a year ago, specifically in feed and residual. And so then they revised this year up a little bit. We come through the balance sheet, and we end up with a stocks to use that's about 13.4%. That's a very comfortable supply. So as we look at, from a market standpoint here into the spring, we're in a very comfortable supply situation, and there's not going to be enough really to change that. So now we start to focus on new crop. And you look at the new crop both on corn and soybeans, you can see we have about a 4 million acre increase in corn acres. And we've got about a 7 million increase forecasted for soybean acres. These are significant increases, and this is going to set the tone for that 2020 to 2021 market year with that big of an increase in acreage. And that tone is that that's going to keep our supply, even with greater demand likely coming from potentially China and the outside world, that supply is going to kind of override that demand. And so as we look forward in here and we start to look at those fundamentals for 2020-21, obviously acres up. I think the take-home message here is when you use a trend line yield, we will produce a record corn crop this summer using trend line yield. Now, Dr. Douglas's forecast, I think, does suggest that maybe there's a little bit of a concern of trend line yields as we get deeper in that summer time frame. But overall, we should be able to have an opportunity to be able to produce a very big crop. We will see increases in pork and poultry usage for corn as we look into the next marketing year. The cattle usage will likely be the same as it is this marketing year. So that demand base is going to stay there. Ethanol will likely increase, especially if China starts to buy more ethanol. So the usage of corn for ethanol will increase, and then demand will likely increase on the export side as well. But ultimately, we're looking at a situation where we're still talking about a 14, 15, 16% stocks to use. So as you look at this chart, that left axis with the red line and the is really a monthly spot corn futures price. You look over there on the right side, you got your stocks to use, right? And so that gold horizontal line, you can see how many months in the last several years that we've averaged above $4 a bushel. Nothing's going to change looking forward from now through the remainder of this marketing year and even going into the 2020-21 marketing year. We are well supplied because as long as that stocks to use is somewhere between 12 and say 16%, we're well supplied from a corn standpoint. And the bottom line is that's going to keep price somewhere in a practical trading range of $3.50 to $4 a bushel. Certainly next fall, could there be times, depending on the size of the crop, that we could break below $3.50 a bushel? And the answer would be yes. And obviously, that'll have an influence on the value of feeder cattle and calves next fall. But we're not in a scenario today, barring some unforeseen circumstance from Mother Nature, that we're worried about corn getting away to us to the top side. for those in the room that are looking at their operations, and some of you are obviously farmers as well, and you might be soybean farmers, and the big question mark out there is, well, how much is China going to buy in terms of soybeans as we look forward? And there's this balancing act of, well, half of their hog herd has been eradicated because of African swine fever, so why would there be demand for soybeans? And then we also have the situation where they're supposed to be able to increase their buy of agricultural products by $12.5 billion this year and $19.5 next year. So is there going to be demand for soybeans? And the answer is yes. China will increase the demand for soybeans. But we have to remember as we start to think about the global supply. We are in a situation with this current marketing year and going forward, we're going to go from a global stocks to use that was about 32.5%, and it's going to drop down closer to about 27 to 27.5%. But historically, that is a very adequate supply. So what we see taking place is there's just going to be a shift of the rest of the world. China will buy more soybeans, but the rest of the world is going to go ahead and buy it from somebody else, specifically South America. And I thought Dr. Douglas kind of laid out that there's not a lot of concern for that South American crop. Is it going to be bumper? No. But is it going to be adequate? Yes. So overall, when you start to look at this, we don't see a huge increase of getting those soybean exports up there towards 1.9 to 2 billion bushels, just because we feel like that the global supply is adequate enough that the rest of the world will shift and go ahead and buy from South America. So we will see and meet that increase of supply here, or demand here domestically, but it's not going to have a huge influence overall in terms of the market. Now, as we think about this next marketing year, yes, we have a huge decline in that beginning stocks, about half of what it was the year prior, but we're in a spot where we're going to plant a lot of soybeans. And when you use a trend line yield, you're talking about a crop that's going to be well on top of 4 billion bushels. And so as we start to think about the demand side, the real trigger again is China. But we feel like that from an export standpoint, other countries will go ahead and go elsewhere to be able to source their beans. So we still have to get through the growing season. There's no doubt about that. But overall, when we start to look at stocks to use, yes, prices are going to be a little bit higher based on stocks to use as we look into this next year, closer between $8.75 and $9.75 a bushel as we start to look at the spot futures price. But because we're in a spot there, as you start to look at that blue bars, with the stocks to use ratio, we're still in a comfortable environment. You know, that level of somewhere right around 12%, give or take, still is a comfortable enough supply situation where we're not going to have a huge impact on price overall for soybeans. Now, to kind of finalize things here, as we look at the hay market, obviously, as Randy talked earlier, there was a lot of moisture in a lot of parts of the world. Overall, we've produced a lot of hay. Now, the quality of that may be down, especially in many of these areas where it was extremely wet. But there's a lot of feed out there from a cow-calf standpoint. And price kind of reflects that, right? Price, as you look at it here, of 2018, 2019, and 20, hasn't changed very much here in the last few years. And we don't expect that to change even as we get into the summer. We do have to watch La Nina closely. There could be some areas, especially as we think about here in South Texas, Southeast Texas is an example, that maybe regionally your hay prices will be a little bit higher. But overall, hay shouldn't be a real issue. So as you start to think about your budgets at the cow-calf level for 2020, we feel like that feed is one of those that we don't have to worry too much about. And the other one is energy. As we look at the United States of America in terms of our production in comparison to the rest of the globe, we are the biggest producer of oil. And we don't foresee that changing anytime here soon in the course of the next couple of years. Because of that, we feel like that the energy market, when we measure crude oil, is going to be in a trading range. At the low end of the range, kind of $45 to $50 a barrel, so you know, very close to where we've been here in the last couple of days. And at the high end of the range, 60, 65 will be the top end of the range. But we're very well adequately supplied in terms of energy. So again, from a budgetary standpoint, as we look at 2020, this is something that we don't feel like it's going to change very much as we look at things in 2019.